SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two at the races here on SiriusXM on this Monday after a big holiday weekend. And, of course, last week, last Monday at this time, we got the famous Johnny D. Ode to Thanksgiving. There wasn't a dry eye in the house, Johnny. Good morning.
Stevie, well, you know, all weekend there wasn't a dry eye anywhere in the Northeast. Did it rain the entire 4 days, or is it just my imagination?
we had a little everything. We had some snow. We had some freezing rain. We had some misty stuff. I don't know. I've become resigned to it. This is like Seattle of the East.
Well, that's what I kept asking people. When did I move to Seattle? Nobody told me. This was crazy. Saturday night, which was Saturday evening. Excuse me. I attended a wedding. My friend Bob Friedman married Cindy, and they had a lovely wedding. And I broke my Jewish wedding maiden Saturday. I can't believe that it was my first Jewish wedding.
You got to be kidding me.
I know. I cannot believe it, that I've lived this long, and it just hasn't happened. I don't know why. It's not like I've avoided them. I mean, I can say that.
some might argue.
Some might argue, but they'd be wrong. The point is, I had an engagement. As you kind of led into my segment. I had engagements like every day. Something was going on this weekend. And so the next day I had an engagement, and the buddy texted me, said, "Will I see you tomorrow at, you know, the brunch?" And I said, "Well, if I get out of here alive, these people are getting crazy with chairs. What is it with the chairs? You guys put the people in the chairs and they go up in the air."
Yep.
It's a little bit frightening if you're standing close by. Because these are not expert chair handlers, I have to say.
they don't bring in professional Jews that are handling that are lifting the bride and groom up on chairs. The bride and groom are one thing. And although there is, you know, some grooms will tip the scales. You might need six people to two to three on each leg. That's true.
Yeah, so you have to be careful. I didn't know if I would make it out of there alive, but I did. And it was wonderful. We had a great time. And so I broke my maiden. I was happy about that. And then it was a busy weekend on Sunday. Sunday had a brunch. A good friend of mine has a brunch every year for 400 of his closest friends. He had it at the Bellevue, the hotel formerly known as the Bellevue Stratford, which I think is now the Bellevue Hotel, I think is what they call it. And he rents out the grand ballroom and invites 400 of his closest friends and family. And he has a lovely, lovely brunch.
Wow.
And
wow.
And then as part of the invitation, he says if anyone would like to go to the Eagles game, he will supply tickets. So he purchased 300 tickets to the Eagles game for 300 of his closest 400 friends who are interested in going to the Eagles game. Then he supplies Subway tokens, which, as you know, in Philadelphia, you walk right out of the Bellevue, you go right downstairs to the Subway,
right.
and you're at the sports complex in a couple of minutes. And he supplies $20 for food and beverage at the game. So this is this is a very generous person who enjoys sharing his good fortune with all of his friends and family, and it's a wonderful event. And it's funny because this year, obviously, it's based on the Eagle part. It's partly based on the Eagles schedule, because there has to be a home game so that we can have, so he can have the brunch on a Sunday and then send everyone to the game. So this year it came real closer to Thanksgiving, obviously Thanksgiving weekend. Normally it's more December oriented. It's more of a Christmas thing, even though we did have Santa Claus there, and we had, the kids got their pictures taken with Santa Claus and their presents for the kids and the whole shebang. Gail didn't want her picture with Santa Claus, my wife Gail. I think she's still afraid of him, one of those kids that just never quite got over it,
Never warm to Santa?
but it was an interesting moment. Santa, after he was finished, at the tail end of the very end of the event, and when the place had pretty much cleared out and everyone that was going to the game had gone to the subway and left, Santa took off his red top coat, part of his suit, and he still had his hat on, he still had his beard, and he sat down to enjoy some brunch. So there's Santa having breakfast or brunch, and there were some little kids still there, still hanging around, and they were mesmerized by the sight of Santa eating breakfast. and I was standing with some of the kids, and their mouths were open, and they're looking. And he turned and he looked at us, and we're standing there looking at him. He said, "Man does not live by cookies and milk alone."
That's great.
We had a good time, and that was wonderful. Of course, Thursday was Thanksgiving with the family, Gail's family, and that was wonderful. Her mother bangs out a great Thanksgiving meal, very traditional. You have the football on and the family, and it's as I said, it's a wonderful holiday. And then Friday, one of Gail's friends that she's known for over a decade is getting married. So we went down into the city for an engagement party on Friday. Yeah, which was great fun, great fun. And what's strange about it is that Gail, this is my wife, and I'll tell the story because we have lots of time.
It is the Johnny D hour, after all.
Yeah. So my wife Gail goes to culinary school, okay? She had a working career, and then things that happened in her business shifting and all, and she decided that she wanted to change direction. So she goes to culinary school, and she's a lot older than the other students at this time in culinary school. And she meets this one girl, and my wife comes home from school and says, "I met this girl, and they call her father Johnny D. And they also call him Johnny Bear. And she's from South Philly, where I grew up." I said, "Well, what's her name?" She said, "Well, it's a long Italian name. I can't remember what it is. It's a long Italian name." I said, "Is it DeFelice Antonio?" She said, "Yeah, that's it. I said, "Yeah, I know. I've known her father forever." So we went to the engagement party, and I've known her dad. We played baseball we were 10 years old. We played baseball with and against each other in the neighborhood in South Philly. And now, by random chance, 40 years later, my wife goes to culinary school and meets his daughter, and now we're celebrating her her marriage. I mean, when things like this happen, you just wonder. The coincidence is just too much. It's just too much to bear.
That it is. That's amazing. When you said Johnny Bear, I thought you were gonna go, you know, 6 hours north.
Talking about the horse in Canada?
To Canada, yeah. Somehow this was going to end up with Bear Stables, but no, okay. This ends up down on 2 Street. I got it. All right.
Yes. But pretty incredible. I mean, and that she should just bump into this girl and form a friendship.
That's crazy.
And then here I was talking to her. So, you know, talking to her father at her wedding, you know, and we were talking about, obviously, the old days, and about people we knew and guys that he went to school with, that I played with. And it's, when you come from a neighborhood, you know, people talk about the hood. Well, we didn't call it the hood, but South Philly was a neighborhood. And if you didn't know the person that you met, you know, you could in 5 minutes connect, you know, the old Kevin Bacon thing, you know, how many steps away from,
sure,
you know, and connect with somebody who knows somebody who, and I, you know, I really feel, very fortunate to have spent time in a neighborhood. You know, I don't know, I'm sure we still have them, you know. I couldn't tell you 5 people on my street, their names, which is a little bit embarrassing. But I think that's a sign of the times, how things have changed. But when I was a kid, I mean, I could have gone up to anybody's house and walked in the door and on my street. You know? I would have felt at home. anyway, enough of that stuff. Had a great weekend. Lots of racing stuff. It was, but again, I was a little. Usually I look forward to this weekend to hunker down, racing, football, turkey, leftover stuffing, and just, you know, my favorite weekend of the year. This year was a little bit different, but it was still wonderful. I enjoyed it. The racing frustrated me a bit this weekend. I got a little bit, irritated. And I know some of the people listening will understand. You know, there's only so many 4 out of 5s a person can stand, you know, before they start to go a little crazy. And, you know, whether you missed the first one in the sequence or you missed the last one, we've talked about this before. I asked you, which is more aggravating, you know, losing the first one in the pick 5 or the last one in the pick 5? And people say, well, I can save if I'm alive to the last one. But, you know, and this weekend it was Del Mar. And I was alive in the pick 5 to, like, 4 horses in the last race. What day was it? Maybe it was Friday, maybe. And, you know, none of them were paying anything worth writing home about. They were all, you know, pretty short priced. So it wasn't like I could save anywhere. And I had to go out. So I get in the car and we're driving and I'm alive and I'm watching on ExpressBet and driving to the event. And I see a horse, like, I look, and I'm trying to watch the video and drive and talk. And I look, and I, wait a minute, I don't have that horse. How could I not have that horse? And it just, sometimes this game just, earlier in the day, I'd been knocked out of the Churchill Pick 5. And I'd missed the Dallas Stewart horse in the, I think it was like the 4th leg. And it was like, it was an obvious horse. I don't know how I missed it. But this is what happens in this game. And it really starts to irk you. So So I had to do some soul searching. I needed an attitude adjustment. And when I get in these kinds of positions, and look, we all get there. I don't care how long you've been playing the game. I don't care what level you're playing at. If you're the biggest bettor in the country, if you're the smallest bettor in the country, we all get to these points where we are not so much confused, but frustrated by what we're doing and how the results are coming out and things that how we miss something about a certain horse that causes us not to put that horse in whatever wager we're making. And how luck plays a part in it, too. I mean, you talked earlier about the double DQ at Churchill and how that, you know, the ramifications of all that and how there were people that stood to win hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's part of the game, I guess. That's not part we like, but that's part of it. And then somebody comes back the next day and they benefit by taking down the whole thing, which then robbed everyone else of their chance. So yes, luck is a big part of it. But so you go back to how do you get out of this funk? And I think how you do it is, at least how I do it, I start to go back to I'm looking for a win wager. I'm looking for just to go back to basics and start to handicap line by line, go back to basics, look for a nice win wager, look for a key horse, look for one horse, and go back to basics, and then start to build from there again. So I had to do that this weekend. I got frustrated. I got angry. Whatever happened to you?
I'm not angry. I mean, I rarely get angry, and that even includes if we go back to this double DQ situation. You know, I was taken down for 23 and 25,000 at Del Mar. At least 4 years ago on what was a 50-50 situation, maybe a 55-45. And I wasn't counting the money immediately, but there's going to be an inquiry here. And then this, when you see the replay and you say, this one on Friday, you knew the outside horse was coming down. The seven absolutely was going to be placed third, no matter that was about a 98-2 situation with the outside horse coming over. But when I got to tell you, Johnny, when I first saw it and I watched it live, I said to myself, boy, this could be a double DQ. And then I kind of looked away for a little bit as they were looking at it. And then I looked back and they still hadn't come back yet. And when it took a little extra time, I thought, they're going to take them both down. And then when they showed it a couple more times, I said, well, the presidential tweet, there's plenty of presidential tweets that should come down. This wasn't one of them. This is tough to take. I mean, if this was a Wednesday afternoon DQ, you'd say, God, that's a bad call. And you'd say, all right. And you'd shrug your shoulders. Given the $300,000 involved, you can understand the extra attention. But as I said to start the show, and as I said, I think, I don't know, maybe 9 months ago during the winter at some point under a similar circumstance, part of it is the residual effect of this idiotic jackpot bet construction. It invites consternation and controversy. And, I mean, to me, it's preposterous that anybody thinks that stewards are working in concert with the racetrack to carry forth the carryover. I mean, you got to be, I mean, of a special ilk to think that. But the opportunity for people to make that claim is made possible by this idiotic bet. And I think it's one of the worst things that's happened. I mean, the further we go with this, the more I find it just a completely unnecessary evil on the game.
There's a couple discussions here.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna do the jackpot discussion right now. But I'm gonna move over to the discussion of whether the stewards are corrupt or not, which is basically what people are, people are upset, they get heated, and they suggest that the stewards are corrupt. Well, if you believe that, you can't be betting the races. If you believe that the game is corrupt at any level, you can't really be betting the races, because everything you do is then being corrupted. So that is kind of silly. The NFL, which National Football League, they now, the gambling is becoming, which we know for decades, there's been no gambling on, except in Las Vegas, on the National Football League results. We know that. That's because the commissioner told us that was the case. But now that there's going to be legalized gambling, we are going to see the similar claims about officials' decisions in the future, when there are millions of dollars riding on the outcome of a penalty flag. And we're already at the point where we watch NFL games on the weekends where, you know, you could call pass interference on every play, or you could not, or you can't. You could call holding. Yeah, we now have replays on everything. We watch things that are violent offenses that don't get called, and we see things that are ticky-tack fouls that are called. It's the same thing in our game. There's no consistency, or very little. There's very little consistency. Does it mean the officials are on the take? No. It's a big leap from human frailty to being on the take. That's a big step. And it's so seeing conspiracy theories everywhere, it's popular, but it's not true. And in my view, we just have to ignore those people when they come up with that stuff. We just have to say, well, what exactly are the stewards gaining by being part of this this web of conspiracy? What are they gaining? Are they cashing tickets? Are they? Well, no, they're listening to the racetrack executives. Well, why? They don't work for the racetrack. And even if they did, you think they would put themselves in that kind of a situation? No, it's not happening. Just forget about it. So you've got that decision. You just have to, I think, avoid people that kind of believe that stuff, because they see ghosts all over the place. And the NFL and other sports are going to see, they're going to feel the wrath from their fans the way, officials and trainers and jockeys. For years, jockeys have been accused of fixing races. And, he held that horse. So he did this, he did that. Do jockeys fix races? Do jockeys hold horses? They have, yes. Absolutely. Is it common? No, it's not common. Not the major racetracks. I can't speak for the minor tracks, because I'm not there. But I've worked at major racetracks. No, it's not common. It's very rare. It's almost non-existent. There's so many cameras now, so many people watching. You can't, if you are worried about conspiracy, how can you play the game? Because you are a victim of a conspiracy. You're not on the inside. You're a victim of a conspiracy. So forget about all that. And as far as the steward's actual decision in this particular case, I was watching it live, as you were, and I saw the outside horse come in. And the outside horse was coming in for a few strides and continued to come in. And finally, the jock reached up and pulled him over. And then the inside horse came out. And the horse that took the brunt of both of those was the horse in the center. And I thought the first one I wanted to see again. I wanted to see. When I watched it live, I said, ooh, that didn't look good. I want to see that again. And when I saw the inside horse come out, I thought, yeah, that didn't look too good either. I want to see that again. But at that point, I thought that the horse in the middle was done. I didn't think that horse was going to finish any better than the third. I thought the both, right? Do you agree?
Yeah.
When you watched it the first time?
It did appear that, but the one, I guess, mitigating factor, because you're already establishing that the seven coming over on the nine is you know, basically hindering him and denying him, you know, his chance to rally between horses. You don't know, and I know you can't project the horse being in a different position, but I do wonder if, you know, if in discussion, the concept of, well, we don't know. I mean, the horse has already been impeded. Now he's being impeded again. Yes, it's in the shadow of the wire. Is there every potential that horse, you know, would have continued to rally? There had to be that element here from what I know and what I'm understanding of the way rules are followed in Kentucky, holding your path is imperative. That is going to draw their interest and their inquiry and their DQs readily, not maintaining your path.
Okay, so we've got 2 points here from what you've just explained, and I understand both your points, and they're valid points. You got 2 points. One point is when stewards say it cost the horse a better place, that a foul cost the horse a better placing. So therefore, the stewards often do interpret where a horse would have finished had he not been fouled. And so they bring that into decisions all the time. And so if that's part of the decision, then it has to be part of every decision. You have to then, and I don't agree with that at all. I don't agree that anyone knows where a horse would have finished. Because I can show you videos of Zenyatta at mid-stretch, and you tell me where... If I could black out the silks and the race and everything, you tell me where this horse is going to finish. Nobody would say first by 3 lengths. No, I mean, yeah. Mid-stretch is like eighth.
Yep.
So telling me where, telling me that you know where a horse should have finished, that's crap from the get-go. But that's the way we do things. Now, the second point that you made is that the rules in states, that the rules vary from state to state. So, or whether the rules actually vary or the interpretation of the rules vary from state to state. That's kind of true. What is a foul in California is not a foul necessarily in Kentucky or New York or Louisiana or Florida. What, you know, what gets you 5-day or 3-day suspension in New York won't even get you a disqualification in another state. So that you have all these different interpretations of the rules, as you said. If keeping, and I don't know enough about Kentucky racing to say, yes, they call it that way all the time, that if you drift, you're coming down. I don't know that they call it that way all the time. I mean, maybe they do. I can't say I'm an expert on how races are officiated in Kentucky, but it's crazy. It's insane because think about it for a second. If you're in another sport and we have jockeys fly to ride all over the country, but if you're in another sport, like, let's say football, what's holding in California ought to be holding in New York, and what's intentional grounding in Florida ought to be intentional grounding in Louisiana. But that's not the way our rules are. You know, we're a little different in each jurisdiction. And that also goes towards medication, which is something else that's kind of crazy in thoroughbred racing, is that it varies from state to state. What works, what doesn't work, what's legal, what's not legal. So we have all these different fiefdoms where, you know, things are different. Still, in that particular case, had I been a steward, and we all can say this because, you know, we pay our money, we get to comment on what happens. had I been a steward, I would have taken down the outside horse, but left the inside horse as the winner. and my reasoning would be that although the horse in the middle was fouled severely by the outside horse, compromised, I don't think the second foul warranted a disqualification.
Yeah,
that's kind of the way I would.
I think that's the.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's it. That's the widespread. That's the overwhelming view. I agree. I mean, that's that part of it.
But as I've said, both on the show and when we've talked or texted about inquiries and things that have happened, I feel like, you know, I've been in this game close to 40 years and actively involved in the racing end of it, watching races for all that time and studying videotapes and working with jockeys and trainers. And I have to tell you, when there's an inquiry, I know what I see and I know what I think should happen, but if I had to bet on what the stewards are going to do, I would have no idea. I would not wager on what the stewards are liable to do because it varies so wildly from steward stand to steward stand, from day to day, from incident to incident. I feel no confidence in saying what the result of an inquiry or an objection is going to be. And so now I just kind of, look, they've got their job to do. My job is to pick winners. Their job is to referee the event. And I think after all this time, I should be able to know the rules of the game. But I feel grossly inadequate in predicting what the stewards are going to say. And I don't think that's a good thing, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, no, I think that most of us, I think that we see them, and you know, particularly if you're objective or if you aren't involved emotionally, I can think of one just recently. There was one ending a pick four. I had a little ticket. I had like a $36 pick four, and I could tell right away there was going to be, you know, a takedown. And so I even when I do, when I have had money involved, and you know, wasn't paying a lot. You know, it was paying 100 and change something. I generally would say, you know, the vast majority of the time I see it the way this, you know, I either no call or call. I don't feel surprised all that often when there's a decision that I would say maybe about one in eight. That's about an eighth of the time. You know, less than 20% or less am I surprised by a ruling. People say, oh, they expect consistency. Well, people couldn't tell you if it's a consistent call. I mean, unless they come like we had it in Saratoga this summer, where it did feel like there were specific incidents that were similar in nature enough where we could say they're being inconsistent. And by the way, for those of you that don't know, in New York, you know, the people were bandying about the Churchill stewards or the Naira stewards. There is no Naira stewards. There's one steward appointed by Naira. There's one steward appointed by the Jockey Club and one by the New York Gaming Commission. Three separate entities comprise that judges stand. So try to understand a little bit about the way these rules are written and the way these things are constructed. You know?
You know what makes
Is that asking
laugh?
Too much?
You know what makes me You know what makes me laugh? I don't get to watch as much football as I used to watch, but I watch a little bit of it. And now I have these NFL former referee directors of officiating for the NFL that now come on the broadcast, and they when there's a review of a play, and they are going to tell you how they would rule or what the correct ruling is. They're wrong half the time. It's unbelievable. I feel the same way about our stuff. You know, it's a judgment. It comes down to, I don't care if you're replaying it. Somebody still has to say, yes, he was down. No, he wasn't down. Somebody's still got to say that, no matter what they see. People see things differently. I guess that's it. You know, and you know what's fabulous about? I have to say this also about my weekend. Even though I started out telling you how frustrated I got and how, you know, this wasn't clicking. As the famous handicapper once said, these horses are not running to my figures. I hate when that happens. I sat there in a moment, and I had the PPs going and the TV and the internet and blah blah. And I thought for a moment, I really do love this. As upset and frustrated, I really do love this because it's such a challenge. And now with AEW wagering with ExpressBet. And the races are coming at you, and you've got you're watching the action on your track feeds, and maybe on television you're watching that, and you're going from track to track and race to race, and you're trying to figure out what's going to happen, and then you're watching the action unfold in front of you, and it's over in less than 2 minutes, and you turn the page, and there's a whole new puzzle. And you dive in, and you start it all over again. And, you know, and when you're right, and you get 10-1 for being right, man, it's the best. It is the best. I can't sit and watch a football game anymore and wager on it. And I think, I'm not going to lay 11 to win 10. This is insanity. I can get 4-1 on something that I really think will happen, I have no idea what's going to happen in this game. You know,
that's good.
Somebody
yeah.
asked me the other, yesterday morning, what's going to happen with the Eagles? I said, well, I think they're going to win. And they said, well, you know, what's the spread? I said, well, I would make it Eagles 3.5. And they said, well, it's 5 right now. I said, well, then I'd have to take the points. But I don't bet those things anymore because they're stupid. I'm a horse player. I'm not. even my wife said, somebody said to me, oh, you're a gambler. And my wife said, no, he's not a gambler. He's a horse player. Yeah. And that's true. I'll go to Vegas. I'll go to casino. I'm not interested in any of that. You know, I mean, I will play to pass the time, but I'm a horse player. That's what I am.
Well,
I love the race.
It's good that you are, that you do, you know, pass the time, because that's how I met you. I sat next to you playing 21 at you know, back in 2006. That's.
That's right. That's right. We shared a table. Not for dinner, but for a little blackjack. Yeah.
Absolutely. That was for the Horse Player World Series, January of 06. Johnny, going to wrap up, but a couple of quick notes. I talked about the $88,000 pick 5 carryover Friday in the Stronach 5. And, you know, it was funny, considering how much major racing and stakes action there was around the country, that was a strong handle on Friday in the pick 5. I think that kind of, you know, the old rising tide lifts all boats, because an $88,000 carryover means there was a $100,000 bet.
Yeah, I think this wager, the value in this wager, and the word has spread. Of course, there's no value in the wager when you're out in the first leg, like I was Friday with that 25-80 winner at Laurel Park. There's little value in that wager when you're out. Adding to my frustration, but when I heard that no one had it, I followed the rest of the races, obviously, because I'd handicapped them. But when I heard no one had it, I was like, yeah, I get another shot at these guys, $88,000 carryover next Friday. It's kind of exciting. This wager has paid way more than it should throughout its existence since it started back up. These races are tough. They're tough to handicap. They've made it incredibly challenging. But if you hit it, you're going to get paid way more than you ought to. And isn't that really what we all want?
Yeah. Well, there'll be a positive expectation potential on Friday with this $88,000, and usually Dave Joseph gets a press release out late on Mondays with the structure. It's been the 8th and 9th at Laurel, the 8th and 9th at Gulfstream West, and the 4th or the 5th at Golden Gate. That's been consistent the last 3 weeks. And, of course, things wrapped up at Calder on Sunday, and we'll move back to Hallandale for this week.
We have got to move you forward. You have to stop calling it the Magna 5. You have to call it the Stronach 5. And you have to stop calling it Calder. You have to call it Gulfstream Park West.
Well, you can say that I have to.
But you have the microphone.
I have gotten better about the Stronach 5 part. I have, in part prompted by Chuck Simon, I have been... There's tremendous nostalgia, by the way, for Calder. I think I'm part of a groundswell, frankly, of Calder nostalgia.
You know, and you talk. I'm so happy to see that Del Mar kept the Hollywood name.
Yeah, definitely.
I like that because those races, you know, just hearing that name, Hollywood Blank. It just brings back memories. You know, okay, it's at Del Mar now. I know that. But just let's not give away, give up everything. You know, the history. That was kind of cool.
Well, there's a few of these. There's, you know, there's the tropical park stuff down in Florida. There's the the Washington Arlington Washington Park Futurity and Lassie, remembering really a racetrack that was very important. The Washington Park was an important oval and claimed by fire, and I like that too. I love when there's, you know, those connections to history from that front. You know, the Sheepshead Bay, you know, we sort of counts, I guess, toward that New York. But, yeah, that's a cool, you know, by all rights, I'd love in New York if we would even bring back some names, particularly at Saratoga, you know, things like the Grand Union and the United States Hotel Stakes, you know, the ones that literally go back a century. Those were great.
Well, we lost my favorite, which used to be, I believe, I could be wrong because it's been quite a while now, the Michigan Mile.
Yeah. Although,
one of my great questions was, what is the distance of the Michigan Mile?
It's a great trivia question, right? Well, you've heard Tony tell the story, right? About, well, the great story about them going up to, you know, they were going to run My Juliet in the Michigan Mile. And
great sprinter.
And Tony got up there. Tony was up there. You know, he would fly up there each day to work her, and then fly back to ride in back in Philadelphia. And somebody said to him, you know, this race is how's she going to handle the mile and the eighth? And he's like, what are you talking about? He said, well, they run it at a mile and an eighth. So Tony called back and said, you know, this race isn't a mile, boss. It's a mile and an eighth. And he said, doesn't matter. She'll win anyway. And she did.
Yeah, I love that. That was one of my favorite trivia questions.
Love it. Well,
anyway.
Johnny.
Well, congratulations on your win this week. Anyway, the Eagles are they're still alive, as you mentioned.
They are. Although right now, the focus, I got to tell you, at least up until Saturday, we're not going to worry about the Eagles. We're still enjoying the afterglow of last year, but our focus is on the FCS playoffs. We'll be at Hamilton on Saturday. James Madison comes to the Shenango Valley to face the Red Raiders. And there's another throwback. I'm still calling Colgate the Red Raiders. I will not be dragged into dropping the red out of Red Raider. James Madison versus Colgate on Saturday. Looking forward to that.
That's exciting.
It is.
That vaunted defense.
Now, then I turn right around. I head for Arizona. We'll be coming starting next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday from Tucson for the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program Symposium on Racing and Gaming. And we'll be there 3 days, and then we'll be out at Santa Anita for Thursday, Friday, Monday, sandwiched around the Futurity and Scarlet.
So in baseball vernacular, we would call this your West Coast swing.
The West Coast swing, exactly. I'm gonna try to emulate my Sabres and go on a streak.
Well, good luck to you. The Arizona Symposium is always great fun. Great information, and it's always wonderful to see the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed young people who are looking forward to careers in racing. Some of the jaded old-timers need to get a taste of that once in a while to realize that this game really does have some great aspects to it.
Absolutely. Johnny, I will. You're making me realize I'll talk to you from Arizona next Monday.
Yes, you will. I hope. Unless you know something I don't know.
No, unless you're going to be elsewhere. Unless you're going to be at... I'm glad. And you've been to a Jewish wedding. Have you been to a bar mitzvah?
No, I have not.
Nope. In other words, wait a minute. In other words, you lived in Los Angeles for 30 years and you didn't meet a single Jew?
I met lots of Jews. They just never invited me anywhere.
but none who actually considered you inviting you to a function. It's hard to believe. Listen, I shouldn't. Who am I to talk? My wife. I'm the first Jew my wife ever met. I'm not kidding.
No,
Tina.
What is the Woody Allen movie? Is it Annie Hall?
It's Annie Hall, yeah. When
yeah.
when Graham looks over.
But my favorite part, that's a great scene, but my favorite part of that movie is when her brother...
Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken played him, yeah, and he's sitting there, he's talking about driving into the break.
Head on, it's, right.
And then he's got to drive, he's driving Woody Allen.
To the airport. And he sees the cars, the headlights and the coming, yeah, the oncoming headlights.
Sometimes, you know, I just want to drive in the headlights. we get off base, but anyway.
There you go. Say something to inspire me. I think you're cute. That'll do it. Carol Kane. I know, it's tremendous. It was just on. It was on recently. Johnny, we've whiled away another 45 minutes. Thank you.
Unbelievable. And for those of you who are still listening, thank you.
Unbelievable. Johnny D, everybody. There he is. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. And we've got to get to Tommy Proctor and to Kenny McPeak and a little bit more. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund direct deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.